Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Cohen's Corner. There hasn't been a ton of news since the last time we chatted with you guys, but the biggest news that happened for the Mets over the last couple weeks is that they've offered and signed an extension with Jeff McNeil for 4 years and $50 million with a club option, but the total value of the contract is, I believe, 5 years and $67.5 million. So that's kind of the main thing that's happened. We're going to go into that, talk about where we were when we saw the news, our reactions to McNeil getting this extension from the Mets, also what it means for both his future with the team, their future in general, some of the other players on the team that might have an extension, hopefully, in their horizons. And then we're going to finish up with some other chatter about the Mets landscape and spring training coming up and the baseball world in general. So let's start with McNeil. So Jake, you actually were the one who broke the news to me, which was very good news for our podcast content. So why don't you tell me where you were when you saw this, kind of how the news came to you, and then I'll share kind of my side of that as well.
Okay. That was what day? Friday?
It was last Friday. January 27th.
Yeah. So I was at home. I think I was getting ready for work, and I saw that they extended McNeil. I was like, wow. And the $50 million, I thought it was going to be way more than that, you know, because considering what Nimmo got, and I know Nimmo's was 8 years, but – and center field is a much more demanding position than second base, although McNeil does play all over. I don't know. I just expected the number to be higher, which is nice that the Mets got somewhat of a discount. You know, they kind of took a page out of the Braves book, you know, getting a hometown discount with one of their homegrown players. And I love it. You know, McNeil, I know MLB, what they ranked him as the second best second baseman behind Jose Altuve, for whatever that's worth. They also ranked Lindor, what, fifth? So who knows about those rankings? But no, it's great. He's a great player. He had a great bounce back year this season. You know, he came out of nowhere through their minor league system. I know it took a while for him to make his debut, but he's hit from day one since he got here. And no, it's great to see. It seems like his teammates love him. I mean, what, he had that one little spat with Lindor. Other than that, it seems like he really gets along in the clubhouse and he can play all over every position you put him at. He's above average defensively. So no, I think it's great for the team to lock him up and for the price they got him at. I mean, it's great. You can't beat it.
So I'll share. So you texted me. I was actually on a plane that was about to take off, like literally was taxiing away from the gate. And I saw your text and I was like, yes, let's go. And then I was worried that I wasn't actually going to be able to like revel in the excitement of this and read all the tweets about it. And then I realized that the flight had free Wi-Fi if you were like a member of the airline. So then I was like supposed to get some stuff done. But then for the first hour of the flight, I was basically just scrolling through Twitter, like looking at SNY had some breaking like news reactions from their people. So I was watching those. So I really thank you for texting me that because it made me realize that I had free Wi-Fi on the flight. So thank you. I was able to like enjoy it. My reaction was not as extreme as my reaction to the Nimmo extension, A, because I was in public instead of around my parents. And also because I feel like, at least for me, there were more emotions involved with the Nimmo contract just because he was already a free agent versus McNeil. It's not like, you know, we were all worried he was about to leave and then he didn't. So I was less emotional this time, but I was still super thrilled because you're right. He's become such an important part of the team. There's a lot of players on the Mets who I feel like have kind of their unique ways of going about the game that fans really latch onto. And I'm sure every fan base has this, but like, you know, for Nimmo, people love how, you know, he runs to first on walks and he like gets on base, has improved so much in the outfield. Like those are sort of his things. Alonso, we know everyone loves when he hits home runs and just has his own little personality things that he does. And I feel like McNeil just sort of has his own signature. You know, he rarely strikes out. He puts the bat on the ball. I feel like watching him hit, I don't know if you agree with me. There's no one else in the majors, and I know we're biased, where I feel like they can just put the ball exactly where they want it at any time. Like you watch him get a hit and you feel like he could have just reached out and like placed the ball exactly where he wanted it. And that's how I feel watching him hit. And it's really nice to see someone who has such a entrenched approach to the game, and that is really celebrated. It's just wonderful to see. And it's funny you were mentioning the contract terms. I agree. I thought he would get 5 or 6 years for an extension like this, but you know, there's a club option for a fifth year. So I mean, assuming the Mets pick it up, it's basically a 5-year contract. And you're right. This is about Braves territory, team friendly deal, I would say. Like I'm half expecting him to have to donate 1% of his salary to either the Braves Foundation or the Amazing Mets Foundation. Maybe that language is in there. I was kind of surprised. But again, I think also when you think about the fact, just the age difference between McNeil and Nimmo, I think he's like at least 2 or 3 years older than him. He wouldn't be a free agent until his age 33 season, which when you think about the contract he would have gotten then, he's probably unlikely to get more than 4 years that season. So getting 4 years now, I guess also makes sense. But the journey he's been on with, you know, being injured in the minor leagues, like I had really never heard of him before he debuted in 2018, to be honest. And now he's like a beloved part of the team. So it's just really rewarding for the second time this offseason, like a homegrown player who fans adore wants to stay with the team and makes that clear. And I think that's just a great sign for the sustainable future of wanting to retain young homegrown players to come.
Yeah, it's great that ownership's doing what they have to do to keep their guys. I mean, we've seen in the past how many players have walked. And I mean, obviously, DeGrom was homegrown and he walked this offseason, but he had already been extended once. And we know the circumstances around his injury history and everything that was going on there. So somewhat understandable that they let him go and they had a replacement plan with Justin Verlander. But yeah, it's nice that they're keeping their guys and that it gives you some confidence that in the future they're going to do the same thing, whether that's Pete Alonso coming up or say Francisco Alvarez is able to live up to the hype and he turns out to be a superstar player, that you don't have to be scared that they're going to walk away and go somewhere else because Steve Cohen's going to get it done and lock him up before that's even able to happen. So yeah, it's really nice to see that they're taking the steps. They want to build, you know, like a sustainable franchise. And this is a big part of it, is keeping your guys and keeping them on a deal that's team friendly while also rewarding the player for what they've already accomplished. So I think it's a great move all around for McNeil, his family. It's generational wealth for the Mets. Obviously, they got a good deal on it. I mean, he had the best batting average in the majors last year, and they're going to be paying him on average the next 4 years, like a little over $12 million. So yeah, I think it's a really solid deal. And hopefully now they'll look to move on and maybe work on something with Pete Alonso, because we all know we'd love him to be a Met his entire career as well.
Oh, absolutely. And you're right. From McNeil's perspective, you know, $50 million, the number to baseball fans have been seeing, you know, $300 million, $250 million thrown around this offseason seems small. But think about what the Mets are getting with this contract. They have a player who hits 300 in his sleep. He can hit, if he's healthy, he will hit at least 300. Also plays like four different positions. He plays both corner outfield, second base. He doesn't really play third, but like in a pinch, if they needed to throw him there for like a couple innings, they could. Plays them all extremely well. I think he has like positive outs above average at like every position he's played. Really, between the outfield and second base, like there's no drop off. He's excellent at second and like excellent at both corner outfield spots. Just the value that they're getting from someone who consistently gets on base, hits so well. Like when there's people on and you need a hit, there is no one else on the team I want up in that spot if they need a base hit. I just think they're getting so much value from this contract. But also, like we were saying, because it seems like from what McNeil said in the press conference yesterday, that basically the negotiations for this began after the two sides did not come to an agreement by the arbitration deadline, where I think he filed a little over 6 million, or he filed at like 7 point something million and the Mets filed at like 6.2 million. So it seems like the negotiations only lasted maybe a week and a half. It's not like this was in place throughout the whole offseason, but the fact that the Mets moved quickly when there wasn't an agreement on that deadline, and then now, very soon afterwards, there's a 4-year extension with a 5th-year option. The fact that they were able to very quickly get that done and that it didn't seem like there was lots of drawn-out negotiating, A, means both sides were motivated to do it. And that's just a great sign for McNeil wanting to be with the Mets, and also the Mets just really wanted to keep him. So I'm thrilled with this. He's just one of those players that really has sort of entrenched himself in the minds and hearts of Mets fans with all the stuff with squirrel, like his squirrel nickname and all, like all the things. And he's just a big part of the team. Any team would love to have him. And I'm so glad that the Mets will have him for at least 4 more years, because it's one of those things now, like think about it. You know, yes, there's still a lot of kind of uncertainty on the pitching side in terms of who the future is there. But I feel like on the position player side, they're really building towards, I mean, let's face it. We make fun of the Braves getting like hometown discounts. I mean, I'm pretty jealous of all the deals that they've managed to do with their young players and getting practically their whole team locked up for like at least 6 more years. So the Mets aren't really on that exact path, but they're sort of working towards a future where they have a pretty good idea of almost their entire lineup for several years at a time. And that's great. They're kind of like halfway there at the moment with, you know, Lindor, Nimmo, McNeil set for at least like 4 or 5 more years. And then they can kind of see what happens with Alvarez. See what happens with Beatty. And yeah, so let's talk about Pete Alonso. Like, Billy Epler got asked about it in the press conference yesterday. Didn't really allude to anything one way or the other, which kind of makes sense. Wouldn't expect him to divulge that many details. But what do you think? Like, I mean, look, we don't have any sources on this, but like, what do you think an extension for Alonso looks like? I personally I have my thoughts, but I also feel like, I don't know, there seems to be a lot of optimism. I feel like there's a good chance this actually happens, but let me know your thoughts on like what that could be.
I'm pretty optimistic that they're going to get an extension done with Pete. It seems like he really wants to be here. I mean, just look back at his rookie year, and I think it was his rookie year where he started the whole LFGM thing. And I don't know, he just seems like he's always gravitated to this fan base, and he just loves being a New York Met. I mean, I guess it could all be show, but he seems like a very authentic person. So I don't know. I take what he says, you know, pretty seriously. And I mean, yeah, he could go down as being the Mets best hitter of all time, I think, if you keep him long term. I mean, home run hitting wise, and just, yeah, he's turned himself into a pretty decent first baseman. I mean, that was the knock on him when he came up. He wasn't going to be able to stick at the position. And I mean, yeah, he may never win a gold glove. I know that's a goal of his, but he's definitely serviceable at first base. He's not the worst first baseman in the league. He's come a really long way, and it just shows how hard he works. And I think he's one of those guys that if he gets a big contract, he's not just going to mail it in. Like, he's very driven to win a championship and to have success in this league. And yeah, that's the guy I want to keep. I mean, I love McNeil, and I'm very glad that we got him, but I can't see how they'd ever let Alonso walk. I mean, just the personality he has, how much the fans love him, just, and obviously his on-field production is unmatched, really. And just his consistency is unbelievable. And I think he's progressed as not even just like a power hitter, but as a hitter. I mean, he's not always looking to drive the ball out of the ballpark. If he's up with guys on base, he needs to put the ball in play and just get a hit. Like, he's got that mindset. It's not just all or nothing, you know? So, that's really nice. And I wouldn't put it past him to be able to hit 285, close to 300 for a season, because he's not just a power hitter. Like, he really can hit the ball and hit it where it's pitched. And obviously not like McNeil, that's his strong suit, but Alonso's not just this great power hitter. And I think that's great for your lineup. I mean, yeah, he can hit the ball over the fence when he needs to, but yeah, I think that would be a big loss if he ever left the team. And I don't see Steve Cohen or Billy Epler even letting it get close to that. As long as Alonso wants to do an extension, which I feel like, why wouldn't he want to, as long as they're going to pay him fair market value, which is definitely something over $200 million. I've seen 8 years, $200 million thrown out. I think he might get a little more than that, maybe like 210, 215 if he took something from them. But I wouldn't expect him to take a huge discount. You know, he's going to take something that's fair to him. But I don't see them why the Mets wouldn't offer that to him. And I mean, it's the best time right now to get it done, because if he has a huge year again this season, and then he's 1 year away from free agency, maybe he's tempted to wait and go into free agency. And you never know what can happen when you get to that point. So I'm pretty optimistic they will get a deal done, and I really want them to get one done. And I think I speak for almost all Mets fans when I say that. I'd be very surprised if Pete Alonso isn't wearing a Mets uniform for many years to come.
Oh, I mean, I completely agree. Like, honestly, my first thought when, or not my first thought, one of my first thoughts when the Correa deal fell through was like, all right, so just give this money to McNeil and Alonso and we'll just reallocate and make sure that they're happy for years to come. And everyone here knows how much I love Pete Alonso. There's a reason why Brandon Nimmo wasn't named captain. He, to me, is the heart of the team. And I think if they get an extension done with him, like, there's a very good chance he would be the captain, just because he's such the vocal. I mean, Lindor too, maybe they could be co-captains, like Keith and Gary back in the 80s. Like, that's definitely a possibility. But, and there's no need for a captain, but I feel like they have someone on the team who from day one has just been larger than life on the field and off the field. And that's not like super common in Mets history, really. When you think about like just big personalities who have so openly embraced New York and so been so like earnest about everything. And, you know, he's just like a very earnest person. He just wears his heart on his sleeve. And I feel like he's a player that it's hard to like explain how much he means to the team, how much he's contributed to just the culture of the team in the last few years with everything that he's done off the field, with all of the things with the 9/11 cleats, his rookie season, and the home run derby donations to the two foundations, and just winning the two home run derbies in a row, you know, breaking the Mets single season home run record, now several home runs over, breaking their single season RBI record. You're right. Like, if he can put up basically the same season as last year or like close to it for several more years, he's going to have like all of their offensive records. And like, that is a track that he is on, and he also stays healthy. And I can't fathom a world where they don't get an extension done with him. Like, much more so, I mean, I probably said this about Jacob deGrom at one point. We can go back and listen. But, like, really, I cannot fathom why this wouldn't be, like, the number one player to make sure that they keep for years to come. Just because of everything, how much he earnestly talks about the team. And I think there's a very good chance it happens this offseason just because of like the momentum and chatter. The fact that they got it done with McNeil, clearly now he's the guy. Everything else is, a lot of other things have been taken care of this offseason. They've squirreled away, pun intended, things with McNeil and Nimmo. Like I was saying, they've got basically three, you know, high quality players. A third of their lineup is like locked up for sure, at least four more years. It's not like they have to get an extension done this offseason. They don't literally have to because he still has two more years with the team. But A, you know, if he keeps producing, it's only going to get more expensive to keep him, which probably isn't an issue for Steve Cohen. But I look, it would be amazing if they actually got something done, you know, in February. Now I, because I'm feeling like who else really on the team is that a concern for at the moment? Beatty and Alvarez are completely unproven. Like, I think they're going to need to, if they ever wanted to extend them, they need to see, I think, at least like at least two full seasons, which they're clearly nowhere close to that. So like, that's not an issue. It's not like any of the other veteran players they have. I'm like, they must extend this person for several more years at the moment. So really, I feel like the focus, I'm assuming, is probably on this behind the scenes. And yeah, you're right. Like, I mean, we saw the contract Austin Riley got from the Braves, which was like 2 years, 10 years, $210 million, I think Pete's going to get more than that per year.
Yeah,
but
I think he'll get less years, but it might be similar in like contract value.
If they gave him, think about what's Nimmo making per year, like $20 million. McNeil's making 12 and a half. I mean, Pete probably would get at least 25 per year, I think. So
I think, yeah, not too much, not too much more than that, probably, just because he's a power hitting first baseman. You know what I mean? Like, they don't get, I feel like they don't get paid a ton of money. I mean, he'll get his, what he earned, but he's not going to, it's not like he's going to approach $300 million.
No, I don't think so. Thing, you know? I mean, 250, I think, is totally reasonable. If they gave him 10 years, I think 250 would be the number.
I'd be all for that.
That's the thing. Who
cares
about
25
million? Who cares about year 10? Like, I just want Pete Alonso.
And he's
on
not
the team.
That old. Like, he'll still be in his 30s at that point. You know?
Exactly.
So it's not like he's Albert Pujols, who was, what, 32, 33? You know, like,
the years for him is not a concern whatsoever. Mm-hmm. However many years it takes. Yeah, it doesn't really matter.
If you're Pete and you don't take the extension, I think the main thing you work on is hitting for average. Because if you could prove that you could hit close to 300 and still hit close to 35, 40 home runs, you know, like, he might sacrifice a few home runs for his average, but if he could do that, I mean, his value will be through the roof. You know, then he's talking to definitely 250, 275. Like, you're getting that range.
Right. Yeah. Because, like, what did he hit last season? Like, 270? Players who hit 270 with, like, 40 home runs and 130 RBIs, like, that pace is, like,
they don't come around too often.
That's not common. Like, if you look at it, last year, yeah, he hit 271, 40 home runs, 131 RBI. I mean, again, there's more stats than
imagine if he hit, like, imagine, so how many home runs?
There's more than just those numbers in terms of a player's value, but still.
How many home runs did you say he hit?
He hit 40 last year.
So what if he hit 288, right? And he hit 36, 37 home runs, you know, get that average up a little bit. I just feel like that's the only other thing for him to really offensively to improve on. Like, if he could hit for a little bit more of an average, but
right. And, but that's the thing. Not everyone, that's not like everyone's game to do.
No,
but
it's not.
Also,
not at all.
But if you look at, like, his strikeouts the last two seasons have been pretty consistently, like, way less than his rookie season. And that's the thing. You feel like he's the type of player, he's not the type of player to ever, like, rest on his laurels. You know,
no,
you see the work in him. You see how much he wants to keep improving, because he knows he's not, like, he's excellent, but he knows he's not even the best that he could be. Like, he's worked so hard at first base, and we've seen it every year. We started out talking about McNeil, and it's also, I thought it was nice, too, in the press conference yesterday, McNeil specifically mentioned Pete Alonso and how sort of his friendship was, like, really a big part of him kind of helping get through the minor leagues and helping him progress in 2018 when he finally was healthy for a full minor league season. And the fact that kind of, you know, they kind of went through the minors together for a few years after Pete was drafted in 2016. It seems like, you know, he alludes to the fact he's still, like, one of his best friends on the team because they've had this journey together. It always seems like when you talk about, like, the other players on the team, like, Pete Alonso is, like, at the center of, like, everyone's kind of friendships and, like, relationships. And he is so important to the team. Like, he's worth more to the Mets than he would be to any other team. And that's how I feel with a lot of their players. That's how I felt with Nimmo, too. It's like the rapport that he's built up with the team adds value. And you know, just in terms of, like, money-making ability, when you think about a player like Pete Alonso, like, people will come to a game to watch him, I think, and to see what he's going to do. There's not that many players like that. And there's not that many players. I mean, this year with them, all the great players the Mets have, there's a lot of players like that. But just in terms of position players they've developed, he is worth the price of admission. And he's worth a lot in like jersey sales. He's worth a lot in all the polar bear merch and things that they can do with his brand, the polar bear burger that they're selling at the stadium. I mean, his larger-than-life personality is worth a lot to the team, like monetarily, for long-term.
And he does everything right. Like, he says everything right in his press conferences. Like, he wrote that letter to the fans. I mean, he just seems like a good guy and a guy that you want to kind of mold your franchise around, a good guy to be a face of your franchise. I mean, we had that for so long with David Wright, and he was just the model citizen, you know? And it seems like Pete Alonso is a little more outspoken than David Wright was, and obviously it's a little bit different.
He's a little goofier than David Wright was.
He's so goofy. Like, he's so –
which
like,
is one of his
fans
best
of other
qualities.
They're like, that guy's a goofball, and he is, but he's our goofball, and we want to keep him, you know? Like, and that's what you're saying with Nimmo and McNeil and Alonso. When these guys are homegrown and they can just, you know, like, build that love from the fans, and you know, like – especially with Nimmo and Alonso to an extent too. Like, it was some dark times that when they first came up and we really weren't that good. I mean, obviously you had 2015 and 16 was okay, but Nimmo came up in 16, 17, they were bad, 18, they were bad, 19, they were pretty bad. You know, they had some special moments, but
Nimmo was injured for a lot of 2019.
Alonso and Nimmo, they've dealt with some hard times with the Mets. You know, it was during the Wilpon era to talk about them. I know we don't want to, but that's when it was, that's when they came up and they kind of changed, you know, changed how things were going. And obviously, Steve Cohen was a big part of that, but it just seems like they were there during the shitty times, and now they're really like.
Then they wanted to stay
being
for
rewarded for what
the
they're
good
able
times
to do now and where they've brought us. And obviously, they want to go much further than they have. But they, you know, they're the building blocks that we have from the previous era that have really guided us as a team to where the Mets are now.
Right. Exactly. And like, you know, all three, they have kind of their niche of things that they're good at, and I feel like the Mets, like I was saying, have a lot of those players that, you know, they're good at multiple things, but they have kind of their shtick, and we kind of know what we're getting with all of them. And, you know, thrilled, just to bring it back to McNeil before we kind of move on, thrilled that he's back in the fold for a few more years. You know, just really excited to see what he can do, because he won the batting title this season. He won the, like, major league, he led the major leagues in hitting, not even just the National League. I was just so thrilled with, like, everything he did this season. He wasn't trying to hit home runs, because even in 2019, he hit like 20 home runs that year. But we know with him, like, he's not a power hitter. Like, he might hit one out occasionally, but we know what we're getting. And it's just great to have one of the best hitters in baseball on the Mets for years to come. Like, that's what he is. He is that good.
And he'll age well. He's proven it. His skill set, you know, like, he'll, the bat to ball skills he has when he's older, like, that should still play. Like, it's, and we'll see. It's just going to be interesting without the shift this year to see what adjustments need to be made, because obviously he loved hitting. When they would shift him, he would just hit it to where there was
nobody. I couldn't believe how much he got shifted last year. I couldn't believe it. Like, at the end of the season,
he'll have a lot more opportunity to pull the ball if he wants to, and it'll be interesting to see what he can do. But yeah, it was nuts how much they shifted him. It was stupid.
It was so many, there were so many times I'm like, have you guys watched? He's hitting like 315. Like, how are you still shifting? How you only have one guy on the left side? Because every time, like I was saying, he could basically, he'd hit the ball and it seemed like he was just hitting it on a rope directly between the third baseman and shortstop, like right in the normal shortstop hole. There were a lot of times that happened, or he'd get infield hits when the guy had to range way over to the right to get the ball when he normally just would have been right there. So I'm excited, but McNeil clearly loves the challenge. So I'm sure the lack of shift, I don't think, he's like one of the few hitters that could actually lose hits because he's so good at hitting it the other way, but it's not like he does that only. So I, you know, I'm excited to see kind of what kind of dribblers he's going to get next year. And like, even with, without the shift, hitting it just over a guy's reach or right down the line or down the left field line. So, and Nimmo too, actually was really good, I think, at hitting against the shift last year. There were a lot of times he hit the ball the other way. So I'm excited to see kind of what his adjustments will be this season as well. Certainly his ability to walk won't be impacted by the shift at all. So
it's gonna be very
see.
Interesting though, like all the rule changes, like especially again with the shift, but for certain guys like Joey Gallo, I feel like it obviously strikes out a lot, but he's a victim of the shift a lot. Cody Bellinger, like those left-handed hitters that
Rizzo,
yeah, you'd have that. I think it was Bellinger talking about it the other day, like when you'd have Machado out in right field and for your whole life it's a hit, and now all of a sudden it's not, you know, like now it will be again. It'll be very interesting to see how batting averages go up, how that affects runs per game. I think it's going to have more of an effect than people are thinking.
Yeah, I'm also interested to see, too, the effect of, like, the bigger bases and, like, stealing bases. And, you know, Nimmo actually talked about that in his extension press conference, the fact that he specifically, which made me a little nervous because I'm like, okay, don't get like get injured stealing bases. We know he's fragile. So, but he did say that a goal of his is to actually be more active on the bases. And maybe with like the bigger bases, he is perhaps a little bit less skittish about trying to steal.
And the pickoff rules as well.
And the pickoff rules, you know, he's someone I feel like he has the speed to steal like 20 bases a year. We'll see if he actually does that. But it'll be interesting to see too how kind of players' career tendencies shift without the shift or with also with the bigger bases. You know, there's going to be a lot of rule change with the pitch timer that's coming in. You know, I don't think that will really have a huge, like, I don't know. There's some pitchers that pitch really slowly, like, you know, Chris Bassitt we saw last year. Kenley Jansen is also, like, notorious for this. I think Kenley Jansen on Baseball Savant has, like, the longest average time between pitches of anyone in the major leagues. Like, he has the slowest tempo of literally any pitcher. It's, like, 31 seconds average between pitch. Maybe with people on base, I don't know. You know, I think there's a few pitchers, you know, it's just interesting to see, too, like, pitchers like Adam Ottavino, who's back with the Mets this year, gave up a lot of stolen bases last year. So probably that will continue given his very slow windup. But hopefully there won't be that many people on base for him to allow stolen bases to. So we shall see. But I think, yeah, it'll be interesting to see kind of what players like improve or what players maybe are slightly hindered actually by the rule changes. But, you know, it'll be something to watch, at least overall, especially the first couple months of the season.
It'll definitely bring some eyes just to see the differences in the game and what it kind of changes. And
whether it's noticeably different or whether it's just like, because, I mean, there's been a lot of changes to the game over the last few years that now at the time we're like, whoa. And now you don't even think about it. Like, think about when umpires first started checking pitchers' hands between innings. Honestly, now I don't even think about it.
No.
At the time, it was like, whoa, oh, my God, they're doing this. And now they're still half-heartedly doing
They've also got better at, like, being quick about it.
Yeah, you know? That's true.
But yeah, definitely. We've become used to it, which we will with everything else.
Yeah, so I think it'll be one of those things that seems extremely out of left field and then will kind of just fade into the normal consciousness. So, yeah, it should be interesting to see how the Mets are impacted by that. There's kind of a lot of new things coming. But one new thing, though, just to kind of segue to something we mentioned before we started recording. One thing that is not happening this year, however, is the Angels selling the team, which, you know, there was big news I forget when it was first announced, that Artie Moreno, who I think has owned them since the early, I think 2003, I'm not 100% sure, which is the year after they won the World Series. They announced several weeks ago or months ago that they were looking to sell the team soon. And then there was this whole statement they put out last week that, just kidding, Artie Moreno wants to give it, you know, another ride. You know, they're going for it. They got Tyler Anderson. They got Brandon Drury. They're ready. They got Gio Urshela. They're ready to go for the season. So I'm not sure what I make of this. Like, I still feel like if they were planning on selling it at some point, that's still going to happen. But maybe not till like after this season. Maybe they'll see what happens with Ohtani. Are they going to try to extend him? Like, I don't know. It's kind of disheartening for Angels fans who probably thought they were going to be moving on to a new era. But it does beg the question of what this means for, obviously, Ohtani is kind of the marquee free agent, we assume, on the market next offseason. So I'm not sure what this means for his free agency, but it seems like if he really isn't going to sell the team, at least till after the season, maybe we'll see how the season goes. You know, maybe if they can actually make the playoffs with the players they signed, like maybe he doesn't sell. I don't know. But yeah, what do you kind of make of this and like maybe how the Mets might fit into this decision not to sell?
Well, we know Artie Moreno doesn't like Steve Cohen. So,
he voted against him. That's true.
I mean, but if the Mets were to offer the best package for Ohtani, I mean, why would you be stupid not to take it? But yeah, I think this is the official beginning of what I call Ohtani Watch. I think he's coming to the Mets. I mean, I'll say it right now. I think he's coming here. I mean, I hear all the stuff about the West Coast bias, that he wants to stay in the West Coast, yada, yada, yada. Okay, well, the West Coast hasn't worked out too well for him from a baseball perspective so far. And if, say, he's buddies with Kodai Senga, Senga likes it this year. I don't know. I just think this narrative that he doesn't want to come to the East Coast just because he didn't sign with the Yankees originally. I don't know. I think people are making a little too much of it. But, I mean, if the reports are true that Steve Cohen is going to make Ohtani the highest paid player in professional sports, I mean, why wouldn't he take that? So unless somebody's going to beat that offer, which I guess is possible, the Dodgers have a ton of money. Like, somebody could beat it, the Yankees. Somebody could do it. But I don't see the Mets being outbid. I doubt it. I'm very optimistic that Ohtani's coming to the Mets. I'm pretty sure that that's their guy. That's the guy they want to get. I mean, all the connections with Billy Epler, he was the one who signed him when he was with
the
Angels.
Good point.
Yeah, I think I think he's going to fill a big need because think if Scherzer has a really good year, he can opt out. The Mets are going to be in need for another ace. And they're going to, I mean, even now we need to, they said you need a big bat. I mean, that's what
he'd be the DH Correa, power hitter and extra pitcher.
What you need. And yeah. Honestly, play the outfield if you need him to. Like, he's not going to, but
in
I
a
mean,
pinch,
in
yeah.
A pinch, you could put him out there. And no, I mean, next offseason, if you're just looking ahead, he's everything the Mets are going to need from a lineup perspective and from a pitching perspective. And it's just the perfect fit. And I mean, Steve Cohen is going to be willing to throw all the money at him that the guy wants. So I don't know. I'm pretty confident that he's going to become a Met. And I don't, because of that, I don't think I would really trade for him because
no.
You're going to have to give up like pretty much the whole top half of your farm system for the guy, which is understandable because of how talented he is. But I personally would not trade for him because who knows, then he could just say you sign him and then he walks. I mean, that's a big risk and you're giving up. I mean, but we'll see. We'll see in the summer, like what position you're in. I mean, if you're really going to go for the World Series, if we're in a good position, if our team's healthy, I mean, you never know. But speaking today, I would not trade for him. Just because it's going to be given up too much. But I'm very confident that they're going to have a really good chance to sign him next offseason.
Yeah, I mean, I might be less confident in you for a couple of reasons, but I'm still confident they really want to get him. Whether or not they actually do is another story. I don't think they're planning on trading for him at this point. I don't even know if the Angels are willing to. I mean, you know, who knows what people might be offering. But you're right. If he really is going to be a free agent at the end of the year and they're not going to extend him for some reason, there's no reason why the Mets should trade for him. I mean, look, you want to win the World Series and he's an excellent player that can improve any team. With the team they have now, they probably, that wouldn't seem like an appropriate use of resources. It seems like, especially without Correa, they're committed to at least seeing what they have in Beatty, seeing what they have in Alvarez, you know, even if he doesn't start the season on the team. They basically have to give up those two players minimum and more to get Ohtani. Yep. So it seems like that doesn't seem like it's the plan. Because you're right, if he's going to be available anyway, you know, go for it this season, but then be willing to pay for him next offseason. So the only thing I would say is I do feel like the Dodgers are really going to make a strong push for him, only because, well, for a couple of reasons. A, this offseason, they wanted to get back under the luxury tax. They've also had a lot to deal with like the Trevor Bauer nonsense and like having to pay with all of that. I think they're going to want to make a splash next offseason, because they didn't at all whatsoever this offseason. I mean, they signed Syndergaard. Who else did they even sign? They've signed a lot of like random Jason Hayward. I mean, the Dodgers really bid like hardly anything.
JD Martinez, but
they didn't see JD Martinez. They didn't keep Trey Turner. So now they're going to have like Gavin Lux at shortstop, I think, this season. I think
Miguel Rojas is their
Miguel Rojas. They trade. Oh, okay. So he's going to be their shortstop. So they did some moves, but I just think, you know, we know the kind of indestructible farm system that the Dodgers have built up. But I do think that they're going to, after this offseason, probably being pretty underwhelming from their fans' perspectives, I have the feeling they're really going to want to make a splash.
Yeah, it seems
off-season.
Like that's what they're gearing up for, is so, Ohtani as well.
They're going to be, they're going to be playing a lot. Yeah.
Think about the Giants, that they were trying to throw money at everybody this offseason. They were trying to throw money at everybody this offseason. It seems like nobody took it. So, I mean, they backed out of the Correa deal, so that was on them. But it seems like they have a lot of money to spend as well. And if the reports are true about Ohtani being on the West Coast, and like I said, I think that's a little overblown. But yeah, I would put the Giants pretty close to the Dodgers as well, with the money that they have and their aggressiveness wanting to go after a superstar player. So,
right.
Yeah, there's definitely going to be teams that are going to be going at, like, there's going to be a ton of competition, but I don't see anybody beating Steve Cohen's offer for him. You know, like, he may pick to go somewhere else. He wants to stay out West or for other reasons, but I don't think anybody's going to outbid Steve Cohen.
No, I don't think so. But I think it's also possible that, you know, depending on the fit elsewhere, we don't really know much about, like, what he thinks about New York. So I guess we'll just see. Look, that would be amazing if he actually came to the Mets, but there's a whole season to go before that would even be a chance of happening. So I do think there's going to be other teams that like really are going to make a strong push for him. And I think the Mets would be monetarily the favorite, but you know, let's just see. I don't know. I do feel like the Dodgers, especially, there's not that many other marquee people becoming free agents next offseason at all in terms of hitters. So I would be very surprised if they're not like right there, honestly, in terms of money with the Mets.
Do you think when the Angels come to town this year, Mets fans give Ohtani like a standing ovation? You know, like kind of the Dodgers did with
Soto.
Fans did that with LeBron like years ago when he was going to be a free agent. They thought he might come. They were like cheering for him nonstop. You know, like I wonder if when the Angels are in town, if the fans will kind of try to put on that full court press and be like, hey, come here. You know,
it's interesting. I mean, maybe. Well, it's funny because like Dodgers fans did that with Soto when the Nationals were in LA, and then he went to the Padres.
Yeah,
So,
it usually doesn't work out, but I mean, it's worth a shot.
That would be pretty funny. Wait, when are the Angels coming? When are they playing here?
In the summer, weekend in the summer.
Oh, they are? Okay. Well, because I know that every team plays every team, but I didn't know if the Mets were playing them in Anaheim or vice versa.
They played Anaheim last year.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, look, I think it's likely he does get a fairly warm reception. I also think, too, like, he's the type of player, even more so than, like, Pete Alonso, like, who we were just talking about. He's the type of player that, like, people will come to watch him regardless of the team he plays for. Like, I'd go to a Mets-Angels game, and, like, I wouldn't be rooting for the Angels to beat the Mets, but I would be excited to watch Shohei Ohtani in person, you know, just from a baseball fan's perspective. So I have a feeling he's not the type of player that, like, opposing fans are ever going to boo, even if he's doing a really good job against your team, or, like, maybe they will half-heartedly, but just because of his, like, good-natured personality, he's the type of player, he's, like, shines larger than whatever team he's on, I feel like. I mean, it'd be pretty funny if Mets fans cheered him. I don't think it would go, like, that far, but I think there would be a lot of people who came to the game curious and excited to see, like, what his role would be in that series while still rooting for the Mets. They'd root for the classic tungsten arm O'Doyle thing where, like, Ohtani had a great game and then the Mets won anyway. So I feel like that would be sort of a win-win. But
yeah, it's not that the Angels have two box office players with Ohtani and Mike Trout, and they still just are mediocre at best every single season. I know it has to do with pitching and all different kinds of stuff, but in what sport do you see a team with arguably the top two superstars in the sport and they're just horrible every single season? Like, I get baseball is completely different than basketball and it takes a lot more to have a successful team, but it's just so rare that you see that and that a team isn't able to even put together one winning season with those two players. Like, it's just unbelievable to me.
Yeah, I mean, I think, like, sometimes there's football teams that have a really good quarterback and still aren't good. It's less common when a football team would have, yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's, you're right. There's just so many more variables in baseball. Like, there's so many more players that you need to have. But I mean, I guess football, you need a lot of players too. Yeah, I think we'll see what happens this season. I still feel like they're probably selling the team at some point because if they were that committed to it, I really find it hard to believe they did a complete 180. I think it's more like we're not selling right now, but probably they'll see how the season goes and then maybe try to extend, try to keep Ohtani. And then maybe after that, they'll see what happens. But yeah, I guess we'll see. Now we're kind of looking ahead to the season starting. We're obviously going to have a lot more baseball news, more imminent baseball news than next offseason to talk about pretty soon. So we're excited for that. Spring training is starting in just a couple of weeks. So I'm looking forward to seeing that. And, you know, we talked about it like last podcast, but I'm looking forward to seeing how, with a lot of the everyday players in the WBC, like how their younger players do in spring training under kind of a less pressured environment than the Braves series at the end of the season. So excited to see that. Excited for baseball to be back. I mean, other sports are great, but just the constancy of the baseball season is just so comforting. And I can't wait till it's back on every night. Even just falling asleep to like a random Mariners A's game is kind of
fun. You take it for granted, you know?
I do during the season. I mean, I know I watch some of those games for a living. I don't watch the 10 p.m. games for a living. I really enjoy watching the West Coast games as like my wind down time at the end of the night. So I'm looking forward to having all that back pretty soon and getting going. So enjoy the last couple of weeks of the Mets not stressing you out because they're going to be back pretty soon with a vengeance. So I'm excited to see what that all brings.
Yeah, I'm excited. It's getting close, you know, like you can feel it. I'm tired of the off season. Let's get on with it. I mean, once the Super Bowl's over, we're going to be jumping right into spring training because of the WBC starting. So no, it's an exciting time. I mean, the Mets, this should be a really fun season, hopefully like last year, and hopefully they'll go even further. But yeah, I'm really excited. Let's just get it going already.
I know. I'm excited. This may be the year. I've never been to a home opener, but I really want to go to this year's home opener because I just really want to see the reception that they all get on that day. So
you need to let Steve Cohen walk out with the team.
Hopefully this is the year I actually dedicate myself to going, even though it's going to be expensive because I want to be there.
Oh yeah. Ticket prices are definitely going to be more this year. I think I haven't even thought about that, but
yeah. Open up the wallets, right, Folks. There,
Steve Cohen wants to spend, I'll spend too. It's all
yeah.
Right.
It goes both ways, you know? So
yeah, it does. It really
show them,
does.
Show them that the money they've spent on the team, like we are also willing to spend to
a
very, very small extent on the team.
That'd be cool.
Yeah. That should basically wrap it up for this week's episode. As always, you can follow us on Twitter at Cohen's Corner Pod. You can also follow me at NYMFan97. You can follow Jake at Giblin_Jake. We look forward to our next episode and for the season starting. And as always, let's go Mets.